Higher Human Performance, the podcast, episode 258, Creativity Lost, Creativity Found. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell, your host here at Higher Human Performance, the podcast. Find the show notes for today's episode at higherhumanperformance.com. In the search this website, just plug in the number 258. Take you right there. I'm glad that you're here. Bula Network is my company. This podcast is brought to you by Bula Network, LLC, a boutique executive coaching and consulting firm. All that stuff you can find over at higherhumanperformance.com as well. But today it's about creativity. The most mundane businesses in the world, they can exemplify high creativity sometimes. I'm thinking of a plumber who dispatches these immaculately clean trucks and out pops this crisply uniformed technician. Okay, a plumber. The guy gets the booties on, puts them over his boots before he enters the house. And only 2 hours earlier, you call them. Maybe you visited their website. Maybe you did everything online. I mean, it's your choice. You're the customer. And after briefly describing your problem and giving them your location, you give them your cell phone number. Why? Well, because they're going to text you 30 minutes before they arrive at your home or your office. Now, this experience infuriates you. No, not at the plumber, but at all the other service providers who neglect this level of creativity. And you're thinking about your TV service provider. You're thinking about your internet provider. You're thinking of all these people in your life that make life so difficult. I mean, you know, they may as well just pull up to the curb out in front of your house in a covered wagon compared to this guy, this plumber, because they are just so inept at being creative. Okay, wait a minute, you're thinking. That's not creativity. That's customer service. What's the difference? What are the limitations of creativity? I first learned creativity in business, well, in structured business. You know, going to work for somebody else, not throwing papers or selling lemonade. I first learned it as a teenage hi-fi sales guy. And you may not think of it as creativity, but I knew firsthand that it was creativity and I knew the power of it. A shopper enters the store and they're looking for a pair of loudspeakers. We visit. I find out the type of music they love. What's your favorite record? I ask. And they tell me, and I sit them down in a sound room back when we had hi-fi stores that did have sound rooms as I go fetch their favorite record. And I come back and I'm handling this record, their favorite record. I'm handling this record as if it were a precious gem, because it is to them. And so I carefully place the record on the turntable. Manually, I clean it and I gently lower the stylus into the groove. And then I turn up the volume slightly higher than most people are used to. And I don't say a word. This experience, their favorite record, coupled with a system unlike anything they've heard before, is captivating. It's enthralling. And it's the moment I live for, because it's the juice, man. It's like, this is cool. This is really cool. Where's the creativity? Well, first, it's in the thought process that compelled me as just a 16-year-old to develop this very simple process. Creativity is lost because of mindlessness. People act without thinking. Salespeople do it all the time. Engineers do it. Accountants do it. Attorneys do it. Everybody does it every now and again, some more than others. Rote procedures foil creativity because we don't think about tricking it up, or we don't think it needs to be tricked up. I mean, why change? Why not change? I prefer to insert the word improve where other people like to focus on the word change. That act of creativity changes everything, because now the focus isn't simply on changing for whatever reason, but it's on improving. People may say, well, you know, I hate change. Who hates improvement? Well, next, creativity was in asking the shopper about their favorite record. Now, back in the 70s, when I was on a hi-fi floor, nearly all salespeople had their favorite tracks on records. I had my favorite tracks on, you know, but that didn't matter. I mean, these were tracks that most of us as sales guys, we knew these tracks, they would really show off what a system could do. And I was into music. I knew music was emotional. I knew songs were personal because everybody I knew, including myself, we had certain feelings when specific songs were played. And by asking my shopper, what's your favorite record? I knew I'd get an honest answer. I mean, come on, it's a hi-fi store. Nobody ever said, well, I don't know. I really don't have a favorite record. I mean, everybody who came in had a favorite record. I might as well know what it is. The creativity was in my focus on their experience, not my own. It didn't matter if I hated their favorite record. It didn't matter what I thought the best tracks were to show off whatever system they were looking at. When the store was empty, I could play whatever I wanted, but, you know, this is their moment. And while I was looking for the record, I would engage them in conversation. I'd find out, you know, why is this your favorite record? What do you love about this record? What do you love about this group or this artist? And people love to tell stories about the music in their life. And I might ask, you know, have you ever seen them live in concert? Songs and albums have meaning to, well, they did in the 70s for sure. Everybody loved to talk about their favorite music. I gave them an opportunity to talk about it out loud. And it gave me some insight about the music that was in their life, the music that they thought was important in their life, important enough to say, this is my favorite. Heavy rock fans, listen, they loved lots of bass and high volume. Classical music lovers, they loved a more flat sound. Well, that would give me insight, not only about what products to show these people, but how to adjust the system that I was going to play for them. There was also creativity in the presentation of the music, though, and it started the moment I removed the vinyl from the album sleeve. I never touched anything other than the very outside edges of the album with my outstretched palms or my fingertips. Yeah, sure, it had technical merits, but it also showed this average shopper, who likely didn't handle their vinyl this way properly, it showed them also how to do it. Part of the presentation. Okay, part education as well. Keeping the oil from your fingers off the vinyl. Cleaning the record, well, that served those same two purposes, presentation and education. But also, it helped make sure that the record was as clean as possible for the very best sound. And besides, it gave me the opportunity to educate customers in proper record care. And guess what that did? Yeah, that also gave me the opportunity to sell them an accessory should they choose to buy this system. And maybe I didn't sell the system, but they had records. I could sell them a record cleaning kit. I could help them protect their record investment. The whole thing was genuine, and the whole thing was intentional. It all served a purpose other than to put on a show. Any dummy can just go grab a piece of vinyl, slap it on a turntable, throw the tone arm down on the thing and let it go. I mean, no presentation skills in that. I was reading the other day, Vanna White, I can't remember the number, but it was multiple millions of dollars every year. Now, granted, the show's popular and it's got high sponsorship and makes a lot of money. So it's not like she's just getting paid to turn letters. But if you stop and think about the presentation, that's all her job is. looking good and turning those letters and looking good. And she's paid millions and millions and millions of dollars to do it. Tell Vanna White presentation doesn't matter. And she'll tell you, well, I've made countless millions doing it. The whole thing, intentional, intentional, intentional. Because in the end, a memorable experience for the shopper, that was my goal. That was the whole opportunity. Creativity is lost in the sea of averageness, stealing ideas, copycatting, following the template that other people have created. We love this stuff, right? We love this stuff. Give me the formula. Oh, you've got a template that I can download. You have a PDF. Great. Give it to me. Sure. I'll give you my email address for it. I'd love to copy and do what you do. Follow the leader. It's all the crap of lost creativity. Creativity is lost in lethargy, laziness. That's part of the reason for all the copycatting, by the way. But when I'm thinking of laziness, I'm thinking of people who just don't think. The company that answers the phone in the same idiotic way that it always has because nobody is thinking about it. The retailer whose people use the same greeting that you hear everywhere you go. Can I help you? How hard would it be to rethink that? Well, not hard at all, but it would take more effort than to just fly by the seat of your pants on autopilot every day. It would require a leader willing to ask a very hard question. You ready for it? Here it is. How could we do this better? Creativity may be lost in part due to the fear of leadership. Maybe leaders are afraid to come up with something new because they're afraid they'll open up a can of worms by asking the questions that creativity necessarily demands. Maybe they're afraid that nothing else will work as well as the status quo. Maybe they're afraid the frontline people will have an idea better than theirs. Oh, well, that would be awful. Creativity may be lost due to distraction. We're not improving things because we're not paying attention to the right things at the right time. Todd Peterson, CEO and founder of Vivint Inc., he was recently featured on that CBS series Undercover Boss. And part of his undercover work involved spending time in the call center where he discovered, you know, the equipment is just awful. Call center employees, they couldn't even hear the customer calling in. Crackly, staticky. Oh, by the way, Vivint is they're a home security company. Being able to communicate with customers on the phone, pretty critical, especially when you're calling a customer whose alarm has gone off to see if they're okay. Well, he had no idea the equipment was a problem till he went undercover. And so it goes. Creativity gives way to the ordinary everyday activities that never seem to unearth the real problems that stymie our success. He had no idea the call center had this problem. Now, I could sit here. In fact, during the show, I did venture out loud with my wife and say, you know, boy, he's got some VPs or somebody who's in charge of the call center. It sure as looks stupid right now, but we weren't introduced to that person. Surely somebody in a leadership position understood this and knew. Maybe not, though. Maybe not. You know, it's the vast marketing budget of, and activities, by the way, of a company like DirecTV, when customers would be absolutely dazzled if they could just get simplified pricing or a better customer experience when they encounter a problem. It's the small, no-account budget of a solopreneur who gets those Vistaprint, you know, free business cards. You just pay the shipping. But then the guy can't embrace enough weirdness to use them in some creative way. And so what good are they? Big business, small business, we all suffer the loss of creativity sometimes. And some of us, well, we're chronic sufferers. It's time to find it again. Or it's time to find it for the first time, maybe. Step one, stop. Forget what other people are doing. Forget what you're doing right now. Just hit the pause button. Now, I'm not saying to stop doing business. It really is more mental than physical. Well, it can be. Stop doing what you've always done simply because you're assuming that it's working well enough. It's not a problem. Stop thinking that all is well. Stop thinking that there are no better ways. Stop living in complacency. Stop being satisfied. Stop thinking that things will never be better. Or maybe stop thinking that things will always be terrific. Just stop. Step number two, think. Questions. They are your friends when it comes to embracing creativity, so ask lots of them. Ask every question you can think of. Go ahead, ask the obvious ones, the ones that you think are on everybody's mind, but nobody will say. Ask them out loud. And then ask the not so obvious ones, and then ask all those that are in between. Now answer them. Get your team together. Wrestle these things down. Take whatever time you have to beat these things to the ground and conquer them. Step number three, be fearless. Try things. Creativity guarantees only one thing, the prospect of failure. You can't let that outweigh the prospect of wild success, though, or even moderate success, moderate improvement. What if it fails? I'm not saying risk the whole company on one wild idea, but if you insist on a culture of playing it safe, you will wind up broke and out of business. Radio Shack is dying. They were once a Fort Worth, Texas institution. Not anymore. They lost their way. But they join a long list of consumer electronics titans that are now gone. If you tell me creativity is risky, I'll argue not having it is far riskier. Go in knowing that some things may not work. The lessons you and your team can learn will be worth the failure, though. Your fearlessness will foster greater creativity. By the way, the reflexes of your team, they'll improve as well. Some of the best creative successes will come from your adjustments made out of failure. Post-it notes by 3M is a famous example. Here's what Wikipedia says about it. In 1968, a scientist at 3M in the United States, Dr. Spencer Silver, was attempting to develop a super strong adhesive. Instead, he accidentally created a low-tack, reusable, pressure-sensitive adhesive. For 5 years, Silver promoted his solution without a problem within 3M, both informally and through seminars, but failed to gain acceptance. In 1974, a colleague who had attended one of his seminars, Art Fry, came up with the idea of using the adhesive to anchor his bookmark in his hymn book. Fry then utilized 3M's officially sanctioned permitted bootlegging policy to develop the idea. The original note's yellow color was chosen by accident, as the lab next door to the post-it note team had only yellow scrap paper to use. 3M launched the product as Press and Peel in stores in four cities in 1977, but results were disappointing. A year later, 3M instead issued free samples directly to consumers in Boise, Idaho, with 94% of those who tried them indicating they would buy the product. On April 6, 1980, Press and Peel was reintroduced in U.S. stores as Post-it Notes. The following year, they were launched in Canada and Europe. In 2003, the company came out with Post-it brand Super Sticky Notes with a stronger glue that adheres better to vertical and non-smooth surfaces. Until 3M's patent expired in the 1990s, Post-it type notes were produced only in the company's plant in Cynthiana, Kentucky. Try nothing and you're sure to fail. Try something new, something creative. Well, you're certain to learn something. And you know what? It just might work the first time out. And if it doesn't, you'll have something to work with. Something that you can refine, something you can improve. Step number four, don't retreat. Working up the courage to be fearless at first, okay, that's one thing. Maintaining the courage, yeah, that's harder. I think some lessons, you know, they're so costly that they're priceless. I used to hear horror stories of retail buyers who would occasionally, they would make these colossally poor decisions. And every buyer does. Every now and again, you'd hear somebody remark that the buyer, he wasn't fired because the executives in charge, they just felt like it was just far too inexpensive a lesson. They really couldn't afford to terminate the guy. And those stories, they made sense to me. Okay, even if they were somewhat fictionalized. I mean, if a guy bought something for, say, 150 grand, and the rate of sale was so poor that the margins were a negative number, and let's say it resulted in a net loss of 100 grand to the company, it seems sensible to me to view that buyer as now having had a $100,000 lesson, an education. Now, sure, it assumes he's competent. It assumes he's capable. It assumes that he just tried something and it didn't work out very well. How do you suppose he's going to vet the next buying opportunity, though? More carefully, maybe. But you know what? He could also be subjected to his own loss of courage, because if that mistake creates a new tentative nature, yeah, give him enough time. He'll be fired for sure. Courage in the face of failure has to be maintained, has to be fostered. Winners don't retreat. They regroup and they come back. Step five, celebrate the process. Now, if creativity isn't part of your organization's culture, it is likely because the price tag is just deemed too high to pay. People are afraid to be creative because leadership values the status quo too much, or they value the safe outcome too much to innovate. But creativity is a process, not an outcome. Everybody wants to celebrate the successful outcome. Well, who doesn't want it? That's easy. Yeah, but that's not where creativity's magic is found. The magic is found in the process of being creative. Celebrate that and you're going to stand out from the crowd. When your team rolls the dice on a well-crafted creative plan, celebrate it. Do it before you even know if it works or not. Do it even if it fails. Yeah, do it if it works. Foster more creativity by making sure the team knows that you value the process. And it's that process that'll help you achieve new heights of accomplishment. By the way, that's the fuel for your team to rise above the fray. The same excitement that I would see in a shopper hearing the details of their favorite record for the first time on a stereo system, unlike anything that they had heard before. That's the same excitement I see in team members that are led by a person who loves creativity. They're alive. They're thrilled to do the work. It's a unique experience, and they want to keep having that experience over and over and over again. Give them the celebration of the process and watch them soar. And I'm going to tell you, you as a leader, you can sit back and you can take credit. You can take credit for having been the leader who made it all possible. That's right. Creativity lost, creativity found. Episode 258, Higher Human Performance. The website again is higherhumanperformance.com. I appreciate you listening. I hope you're a subscriber to the podcast. If you're not, get with the program. There's links over at the website where you can do that through iTunes, Stitcher, whatever your favorite podcast catcher is. You can find those links over at higherhumanperformance.com. Again, this is brought to you by Bula Network LLC. This is my company, a boutique executive coaching and consulting company. I would encourage you to visit the website, snoop around, check me out. Check out the About page, who I work with. You can even click the Hire Me page. Now, there's no prices there, but it'll tell you how I work. It'll kind of tell you about my process. If I can be of service, that'd be great. If I can't, hey, I hope you enjoyed the show. We are all about trying to help people build effective businesses, effective careers. It's exactly what the title says it is, Higher Human Performance. Again, my name is Randy Kentrell. I'm coming to you from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, inside a place that I call the Yellow Studio.